Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Varadhari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Varadhari. Dashoda Nandana Vraja Janadandana Dashoda Nandana Vraja Janadandana Dashoda Nandana Vraja Janadandana Jamuna Tira Manachari Jamuna Tira Manachari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Varadhari Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Varadhari Jashoda Nandana Vraja Janadandana Jashoda Nandana Vraja Janadandana Jashoda Nandana Vraja Janadandana Jashoda Nandana Vraja Janadandana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gaur Premanande Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraye Nashta Praeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 2nd chapter. Thank you. This is especially nectarian, life-changing, because although all of Srila Prabhupada's books are that way, this is especially meaningful because this section of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada was translating just near the time he was leaving the planet, winding up his pastimes. And always when I'm reading these sections in this first part of the 10th canto, I have an image of Srila Prabhupada, like Bhishma Dev, speaking Krishna Katha to the last breath. And today we're going to hear something about Lord Balaram and his appearance in this world, because today is the appearance day of Lord Baladev, Krishna's first expansion. And we'll talk about some very basic principles that come out from the teachings in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam that are applicable, they're very practical for our advancement in devotional service. And this probably isn't very hot compared to Vrindavan, right? Do you have the temperature in Vrindavan right now on your iPhone? Check it out and we'll see. And then we can feel cool. But I was thinking today about this appearance day of Lord Balaram and how it's yet another opportunity, but seems like even a greater opportunity than usual to keep the vibration going, because the only panacea, the only cure for the disease of material life is mentioned in the very beginning of the 10th canto. Nivritta tarshar upagiyamana bhavaushada chotra manobirama ka utama shloku gunana vada puman virajeta vina pashugnat. Shukadev Goswami says that the only remedy for materialistic life is hearing about Krishna, hearing Krishna Katha. The Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam is the direct process of devotional service, and it puts one directly in touch with transcendence just by hearing. And by hearing, even if one doesn't recognize it at first, Prabhupada mentions there are three classes of people generally. One is the karmis, and they're interested in materialistic life. And then there are those who are Paramahamsas, they're on the topmost stage of life, relishing Krishna Katha, and there are those who are aspiring for that position. And he says that all three classes can benefit from Krishna Katha. And at the beginning of the speech of Shukadev Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, Parikshit notes that normally it would be very difficult. Taktodam api padyate, pibam tam tvam cham bhoga, tutam harikatam ritam. He says, normally it's very difficult to fast without water and without sleep and simply hear constantly. He says, however, because tutam harikatam ritam, because falling from your mouth is the nectar of Krishna Katha, this is keeping me alive. And until one actually comes to this position, Prabhupada says it's like pushing a car. When a car is stalled, you have to push and push. And then the way he puts it, for it to start, when the energy comes, then you go automatically. So we have to keep giving the energy to the Krishna Katha and to hearing about Krishna. Srinvatam Sva Katha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. Just by hearing, we get this punya, it builds up, it's pushing, and then the energy comes, which is natural. It's the natural energy of the living being to love Krishna, to run towards Krishna. In fact, in the Brahma Samhita, it's mentioned that when Brahma received the mantra, tapas tom tapa etena tavasiddhir bhavishyati, and Divine Saraswati said, by chanting this mantra, you'll come to the perfectional stage. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his purport, says that the mantra tends to make the mind run after Krishna. This is a natural condition that the mind wants to run after Krishna. But in the stage of practice, it means there's some work involved. But there's work involved in the material world anyway. It's a difficult place, difficult to move and to do anything here. So we might as well put the work into sadhana bhakti, pushing the car of bhakti until it starts, until we can go. This is from the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, Prayers by the Demigods, and this is text number 8. Devakya jatare garbham sheshakyam dhamma mamakam tat sani krishya rohinya udare sanniveshaya. I'll say the word for word and then you can call it out responsively. Devakya of Devaki, jatare within the womb, garbham the embryo, Shesha Akyam, known as Shesha, the plenary expansion of Krishna, Dhamma, the plenary expansion, Mamakam, of me, Tat, him, Sanikrishya, attracting, Rohinya, of Rohini, Udare, within the womb. Sanniveshaya, transfer without difficulty. Translation. Within the womb of Devaki is my partial plenary expansion known as Sankarshan or Shesha. Without difficulty, transfer him into the womb of Rohini. So Krishna is speaking here to Yogamaya. All of Krishna's associates and all of his energies come to assist him in his pastimes. In fact, that's the purpose of life, to assist Krishna in his lila, in his pastimes. And he has many different kinds of potencies. Parashya shaktir vividhaiva shruyate svabhavika jnana bhalakriyacha. Many kinds of potencies. He's the supreme potent. Om purnam adah purnam idam purnat purnam utachate purnasya purnamadaya purnam eva vishishate. He's perfect and complete. And all the energies that come from him are perfect and complete also. And in this section of the Bhagavatam, Krishna is already within the womb of Devaki, and the demigods are coming to assist him. And they're coming to offer their prayers in this chapter. Therefore, it's called Prayers by the Demigods. And Yogamaya, who's Krishna's potency, comes to assist him in the pastime, and we'll hear more about that in a minute. And so he's asking her to perform this task. Within the womb of Devaki is my partial plenary expansion known as Sankarshan or Shesha. Without difficulty, transfer him into the womb of Rohini. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The first plenary expansion of Krishna is Baladev, also known as Shesha. The Shesha incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead supports the entire universe, and the eternal mother of this incarnation is Mother Rohini. Because I am going into the womb of Devaki, the Lord told Yogamaya, the Shesha incarnation has already gone there and made suitable arrangements so that I may live there. Now he should enter the womb of Rohini, his eternal mother. In this connection, one may ask how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always situated transcendentally, could enter the womb of Devaki, which had previously been entered by the six asuras, Shadgarbhas. Does this mean that the Shadgarbhasuras were equal to the transcendental body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The following answer is given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Vinditam Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Swayam rupa katahmayam dadati svapadantikam vandeham sri guru sri uta padakamalam sri gurun vaishnavamscha sri rupam sagrajatam sahagana ragunathan vitam tam sajivam sadvetam sadvatutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam sri radha krishna padan sahagana lalita sri vishakan vitamscha he krishna karuna sindo Dinabando jagatpate Gopesha gopika kanta Radha kanta namostute Tapta kanchana gaurangi Radhe vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu sute devi Pranamami hari priye Vanchakalpadrubhyascha Kripa sindubhyevacha Patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Go Premanande Hari Bom. So first offer my humble obeisances to all the Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis. Thank you very much for coming. And we're here to glorify the Lord. And that's the eternal satisfaction of the soul. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yatod bhaktir hoksaje ahaitukya pratiyata yaya masuprasiditi. It's satisfaction of the soul to render services unmotivated and uninterrupted. And that's something worth mentioning today about unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service. It's the only thing to satisfy the soul. And there's a process to come to that position. Because although I may understand theoretically or see the importance, I may also be battling with my senses to take this path of bhakti, the direct path of bhakti. Therefore, I must follow the process. But as is mentioned in this purport, and throughout the Shastra, we must depend on the mercy of Krishna to move forward. It's only by the empowerment of the Lord that we can glorify Him, that we can move our lips even. In fact, Srila Prabhupada speaks about Baladev as the active force behind everything. And it's His empowerment that allows us to move our lips. When we get up in the morning and we're thinking, shall I chant Hare Krishna? Shall I do my prescribed sadhana, my 16 rounds of japa, minimum 16 rounds of japa? And that strength, that impetus, first of all, for that thought to come into my mind, and then to feel an inspiration to do it, and then to have the power to battle against the senses that are pulling me in every different direction, to actually sit down and concentrate. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama, Rama. Hence, Srila Prabhupada coined the phrase devotional service. And he made it so abundantly clear that it's not a passive process. He said when Krishna spoke to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and gave him instructions about devotional service, and then Arjuna agreed to it, even though Arjuna could understand that Krishna was the doer. Prabhupada said, Arjuna didn't sit down and say, or Krishna didn't tell Arjuna, you can sit down and smoke ganja, and I'll fight the war. Rather, Arjuna very expertly, he used everything he learned from all of his teachers, and he had to focus his mind completely. Tasmat sarvishu kalishu yadan nusmara yudyacha. Mayarpita mano budhir mami vaishyatya samshayaha. And Krishna told him that in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He told Krishna to fight and at the same time remember me. You have to do both things. You have to, because we can't just artificially renounce anything. We still have to fight and do our duty in the world. At the same time, we have to remember Krishna. And to do that, we need the strength of Balaram. Bala. That's spiritual strength, and it comes from Balaram. Continuing Srila Prabhupada's purport. In this connection, one may ask how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always situated transcendentally, could enter the womb of Devaki, which had previously been entered by the six asuras, or the Shadgarbhas. So the Shadgarbhas were, in their previous life, sages who had made an offense. There's two accounts of the offense they had made. One was that they were sons of Hiranyakashipu, who had gone off on their own to worship Lord Brahma, to get their own benedictions, independent of Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu cursed them that you'll come back in your next life and I'll kill you. And another account was that they had laughed at Lord Brahma when he had made an inappropriate act. And therefore, because of laughing at a great devotee and controller, Brahma, they were also cursed. But however they were cursed, they took birth in the womb of Devaki, and they were the six sons of Devaki who were killed by Kamsa. Because the scene is that Devaki and Vasudeva are coming home on their wedding day on a chariot, and Kamsa, who is a great demon, is helping them by driving the chariot, and from the sky, the demigods, who want to actually bring on Krishna's pastime. So they speak in an unembodied voice, but they say to Kamsa that the eighth son of your sister is going to kill you. You're a fool. You're driving her home, and the eighth son is going to kill you. What a fool you are, Kamsa. And Kamsa is a demon. So in the Bhagavatam, fifth canto, it is said, Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvargunas tatra samasite sura. Harava bhaktasa kuto muhadguna manorate nasati tavato bihi. How hot is it in Vrindavan? 77? What's the temperature here? It's raining. That's nothing. Well, it's hotter in Sacramento anyway. Good qualities come to the devotee naturally by performing devotional service. Good qualities. But for someone whose intention is not to surrender to Krishna, there are no good qualities, even though it appears there may be temporarily. So Kamsa, although it appeared that he was doing a good deed and he was showing off his magnanimous nature by driving his sister home and driving the chariot, as soon as he heard that there was nothing in it for him, in fact, it was a bad deal, he immediately dropped the reins, picked up a sword, grabbed the hair of his sister, and was about to kill her. And Vasudev had to protect her. So at first, he told him, look, what's the point of killing her? Because you're going to lose your reputation by killing a woman, by killing your sister, right on an auspicious day. And he said, besides this prophecy that you're going to die from the eighth, you're going to die anyway. What's the difference? And he explained to him that we all die in a certain time. We have to transmigrate from one body to another. But Kamsa wasn't concerned with that at all. He was only thinking of his own temporary benefit and how he was going to be killed by the eighth son. So finally, Vasudev had to plead for Devaki's life by saying that whatever sons come, I will give you and you can kill them. And because Vasudev is a pure devotee and Kamsa knew that his word was good, he allowed them to go ahead. And that's where the Shadgarbhas come in. They were born first into the womb of Devaki, one after another, fulfilling the curse from their previous life. And then Kamsa took them one by one and killed those children. So the question was, how is it that they came into the womb of Devaki first, before the Supreme Personality of God had appeared there? They're asuras, and they're living out a curse. The entire creation, as will be, as well as its individual parts, is an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means we're sitting on Krishna right now, because that's his energy. His, everything is coming from him. Therefore, even though the Lord enters the material world, he does not do so. This is explained by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita 9:4-5. Anyone who knows these verses can chant along. Maya tatamidang sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matstani sarva bhutani nachaham teshovastitaha nacha matstani bhutani pashyame yogamaishvaram bhutabrinna cha bhutasto mamatma bhutabhavanaha. By me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, myself is the very source of creation. Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma. Everything is an expansion of Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet everything is not the Supreme Godhead. And he is not everywhere. Everything rests upon him, and yet he does not rest, and yet does not rest upon him. This can be explained only through the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. Such truths cannot be understood, however, unless one is a pure devotee. For the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyash chasmi tattvataha. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is only by devotional service. Even though the Lord cannot be understood by ordinary persons, this principle should be understood from the statement of the Shastras. A pure devotee is always transcendentally situated because of executing 9 different processes of bhakti yoga: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Thus situated in devotional service, a devotee, although in the material world, is not in the material world. Yet a devotee always fears, because I am associated with the material world, so many contaminations affect me. Therefore, he is always alert in fear, which gradually diminishes his material association. Here's a main point, that by fear, we diminish the influence of the material nature that's acting upon us. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7th canto, Prahlad Maharaj, when he sees Lord Nrsingadev with his garland of intestines and his roaring, which is scaring away elephants all over the world, and the demigods themselves are afraid to come before him, Prahlad Maharaj was just a 5-year-old boy. He says, Trastos maham kripana vatsala dusahogra samsara chakra kahanad grasatam pranita. That I'm not afraid of your ghastly form, but what I am afraid of is the power of Maya to influence me, that I can fall down again into the wheel of karma and become absorbed in Maya and completely forget about you. So this is one very important point about fear. There's a couple kinds of fear. One is fearing to fall down into the material existence again. And another kind of fear is to make an offense to the Vaishnavas, Vaishnava Parad. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada explains that if I offend a Vaishnav, then gradually my desire to perform devotional service will wane. And gradually, I'll give it up because of my offense. And in the Madhurya Kadambini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that any kind of hesitancy I have in chanting the holy name, whatever is holding me back, the inability to concentrate or the causeless unwillingness I have to chant the Lord's name, or just not feeling ananda while chanting, is coming from offenses in my previous life that are still lingering. So one thing that I should be extremely afraid of is Vaishnava Aparadha. In the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Maharaj Rahugana tells about this. When Judd Bharat, the great Paramahamsa devotee, was walking along the road and concealing his identity as a great devotee because he didn't want anything to do with the world, he was picked up by the party of Maharaj Rahugana, who were carrying the king, who was carrying Maharaj Rahugana on a palanquin. And one of the palanquin carriers, I guess you need four, and one of them had fallen sick, so they needed a new man to carry. And they saw Judd Bharat, who was very young and stout and strong. So they called him over and they said, "Hey, you, come here. Carry for the king. Take this palanquin." And because Judd Bharat had no engagement in this world, he was simply wandering and depending on the mercy of Krishna, he simply complied and he took the stick on the palanquin and began to carry the king with the others. However, because he was a devotee, he didn't want to step on any insects. And that's hard because there are insects here, there, and everywhere. And wherever he saw an ant, he would swerve. And therefore, inside the palanquin, Maharaj Rahugana was being jostled this way and that way. And therefore, very sarcastically, when he found, he yelled at all of his carriers. And they said, "It's not us, it's the new guy." and so he looked at Judd Bharat, and sarcastically he said, "So you're an old man, your body's so old you can't even carry this properly. What's the matter? You're so weak and skinny you can't carry this palanquin like a regular person." He began berating him and deriding him. And after Judd Bharat didn't react for a long time, finally Judd Bharat spoke to Maharaj Rahugana. He said, "I'm neither fat nor thin, I'm neither old nor young, strong or weak, because actually I'm not my body. I'm the soul within the body." And when he spoke this knowledge of self-realization, Maharaj Rahugana felt a thunderbolt in his heart that he had offended a great Vaishnav. This is a dangerous thing because by words, by mind, by body, I can make an offense to another devotee. When we're walking even through a crowd of devotees, sometimes if we bump into a devotee, we have this habit, we'll go, "Excuse me, you know, because by my body I've bumped into you." Or by words or by mind, if I make an offense to a devotee, I have to rectify. Maharaj Rahugana got down from his palanquin as low as he could get and fell at the feet of Judd Bharat, and he prayed for forgiveness. And then he spoke a verse in which he said that this world is a very fearsome place, but the most fearsome thing to me is making an offense to a Vaishnav. So this is one place, speaking of fear. Fear is actually one of the motivating factors in devotional service, and here it's being mentioned very particularly, that if we carry fear in our heart, it should be fear about offending a Vaishnav. I should not make an offense to a Vaishnav. And if I do, I should rectify.
Kurta? Does it matter what stature of Vaishnav?
Yes, it does matter the stature of the Vaishnav, although we shouldn't think like that also. Nectar Devotion mentions that there are various levels of Vaishnavs, and if one offends a very highly placed Vaishnav, then the effect is even more harsh. But still, but also Shastra says that we also shouldn't think like that. we should be careful not to also think that, oh, that this is a small time Vaishnav, therefore, you know, I can make an offense. Yeah. Yes, Bhumi. Well, let's use the microphone. Can we pass Bhumi the microphone, please? Here comes.
Sometimes in the course of associating with an assembly of Vaishnavs, we come across people who are reckless in terms of committing offenses to Vaishnavas, and I find myself getting very rattled about that. to. How can we deal with that when we are in an assembly of devotees and we see that sort of recklessness?
Very carefully. In the Chaitanya Bhagavad, it's mentioned how Advaita Acharya and Lord Nityananda used to have mock arguments. And, for instance, when Nityananda Prabhu and Lord Chaitanya came to the house of Advaita Acharya for lunch, and they sat down to eat, Advaita Acharya was feeding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu more and more and more, and he said, "I'm a sannyasi, I'm not supposed to eat so much." And meanwhile, Lord Nityananda started criticizing Advaita Acharya, saying, "I've been fasting for 3 days, and now you're feeding me barely anything." And they got into arguments back and forth. And Vrindavan Das Thakur says that sometimes people take sides and they think, oh, they were really fighting, and they take sides in the argument. And he said you should be careful not to take sides when Vaishnavas have a disagreement. And also, if we're in an assembly where that's going on, then where somebody's reckless, it's not out of the etiquette to rectify that in the place. You know, if someone offends a devotee or says something inappropriate, then it should be rectified through words. In other words, somebody should say something and say, "Well, if someone's offended a devotee through words recklessly, someone should speak up and say, actually, that's not the case. This devotee is actually a great devotee, and you know, we should offer all respects. One should, you know, come to the rescue of a devotee. Be very careful." I know those two things sound contradictory, but that's why I said we should do it carefully, considering who's doing the argument and what the situation is. And also, it's important to find our niche, because there are many different kinds of assemblies, and we should find an assembly of Vaishnavas that is like-minded. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told this to Sanatan Goswami, that in the association of like-minded devotees, hearing and chanting is most productive. And if we go to a place that is where devotees aren't like-minded, and we feel out of place there, then we might want to find another place. Go ahead. Okay, it'll come back. All right, so one of the points I'm making tonight is about fear. And everyone can move up by 7.2 inches, because Sonal can barely sit down there. So fear of making an offense to devotees, and also fear, a very healthy fear of Maya. Because Prabhupada described Maya like a silver-tongued salesperson who comes to your door and knocks on your door, and you look through the peephole, and she says, "You know, just open up for a second. I just want to show you something," like we do, and when we go door to door. And we know how well it works, too. Once they open the door... So consider, on the other side, if Maya is knocking, then we should be very afraid to open the door, keep the door closed, especially through having very tight sadhana. So specifically here, Srila Prabhupada says, "Therefore, the devotee is always alert in fear, which gradually diminishes his material association." Symbolically, Mother Devaki's constant fear of Kamsa was purifying her. A pure devotee should always fear material association. And in this way, all the asuras of material association will be killed, as the Shad-garbhasuras were killed by Kamsa. It is said that from the mind, Marichi appears. In other words, Marichi is an incarnation of the mind. Marichi has 6 sons: Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy. That's Lagime, if you want to remember it. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy. Lagime. Lagime, you can remember. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in pure devotional service. This is confirmed in the Vedas. Bhaktir evainam darshayati. Only bhakti can bring one in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared from the womb of Devaki, and therefore Devaki symbolically represents bhakti. And Kamsa symbolically represents material fear. When a pure devotee always fears material association, his real position of bhakti is manifested, and he naturally becomes uninterested in material enjoyment. When the six sons of Marici are killed by such fear, and one is freed from material contamination, within the womb of bhakti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. So once in London, Srila Prabhupada gave a class in which he said that a very advanced devotee cannot fall down. And he was referring to himself in the lecture. And afterwards, Prabhupada was offering some prayers to the deities, and one of the devotees asked him, "What were you praying?" He asked a bold question. What kind of prayer were you making? And Prabhupada was said that I was praying that I won't fall down, that I won't be captured by Maya. And the devotee said, "But Prabhupada, you said in the class that you can't fall down." And Prabhupada said, "That's why. Because pure devotee is always praying for Krishna's protection and not to fall down. The second that I think that I'm safe or that I've reached a certain position and now I can't fall down, this is a dangerous position. So this fear should always be there." And lagime, lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy. These are born from the mind. In the Bhagavad Gita 2:56, Krishna talks about the sthita dhir muni. And he says that the muni, or the sthita dhir muni, who is steady in devotional service, is someone who's conquered over these vitaraga bhaya krodha. That the raga, bhaya, and krodha, these influences that come from the material nature. There's a $5 fine from now on. If your cell phone goes off, you do get a Shriya Upanishad, but it will be enforced. Nilesh, you're enforcing. So whoever's phone goes off, $5 fine, and you get an Isha Upanishad. Fair enough? Is that fair enough for you? So initially, one has to practice devotional service, and it's a process. Ado Shraddha Tata Sarusanga Tabhajana Kriya Tato Narta Nivritti Syat Tato Nishta Ruchistata. So before Krishna makes his appearance, there's work to be done. These influences, which are born of the mind, Marici is born of the mind, and from him his offspring are like these Shadgarbhas. These are the lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy. And these have very strong influence over the soul, keeping him in the material world. So one must steadfastly take to the process of devotional service without deviation in order to gradually become free from these influences, and then Krishna makes his appearance. So in the beginning, Ado Shraddha, there's some faith about taking to the process of devotional service, and faith means where you place your heart. So someone who's faithful, and faith comes about through a jnata sukriti. Wandering in this world, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, someone comes in contact with devotees and devotional service, and they get a deposit in their heart. This is a jnata sukriti, a special kind of sukriti. Brahmanda brahmante kon bhagyavan jeev, guru krishna prasadi pai bhakti lata beach, which leads one to the association of devotees, which is called sadhusanga. And once in sadhusanga, one who's serious takes to bhajana kriya, which means the regulated life of devotional service. And in that process, including taking a vow of initiation, vowing to chant a certain number of rounds and follow the four regular principles, as an example, one passes through different stages where, even though I'm practicing devotional service, I'll be afflicted by the unsteadiness born of the mind. And this is called anishta bhajana kriya. My practice is affected And it's very hard to be steady, but I keep trying anyway. And there are different symptoms of that. So as one performs that kind of determined devotional service, then Baladev helps. Baladev is the original spiritual master. And therefore, it's his influence that allows us to stay steady in devotional service. And when that steadiness is there, Krishna makes his appearance. In Jagannath Puri, when I was there for the Rath Yatra, I saw that when the Lord comes out of the temple, first Balaram comes out. And he takes a long time to get up on his cart. All these pujaris come out. They're all wearing gumshas. It's so hot in Puri during Rath Yatra. This is nothing. So hot. And they just wear one gumsha. That's it. And when they bring out Lord Balaram, he's enormous. And he comes out, and he has this, when I saw, he has this headdress. And he rocks back and forth. And it's like he's intoxicated. And I kept thinking, we were watching, it took an hour for him to get up on his cart. And he was rocking back and forth like he was intoxicated. And a couple times I thought he was going to tip over and crush all the pujaris. It was really a dramatic scene. And they have these ramps going up to the cart. And they would get halfway up the cart and they all be pushing and pushing and then back down again. It was so difficult. And the struggle and the struggle. And then finally, after about an hour, Lord Balaram got up in his cart and it took his place. And right after that, Subhadra came out, like they just carry her out, and then she comes on. And then Jagannath relatively simply comes out and goes on. I was sitting next to Mahanidhi Swami. We were up on the balcony, because you can rent a place up in the library so you can look down and watch the whole thing, watch the Lord come out of the temple. And he was commenting different things to me. And he said, you see, in the beginning, it's very difficult. But when you contact devotional service and the spiritual master, Lord Balaram, then things become very easy. But in the beginning, there's unsteadiness, and there's a big push, and it feels like a pushing process. But after that, it becomes easy. So when the six sons of Marici are killed by such fear, and one is freed from material contamination, within the womb of bhakti, the Supreme Personality of God, it appears. Thus, the seventh pregnancy of Devaki signifies the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the appearance of Lord Balaram. So Balaram is called Sankarsana because he first appeared in the womb of Devaki. And the reason he appears there is to set the mood and to purify the environment so that Krishna can appear. Because the Shadgarbhas, the Asuras, had already appeared there. And then Baladev appears there. But then Yogamaya transfers Baladev to the womb of Rohini, who's his actual mother. But Baladev's position is that he's Krishna's servant. He has this serving ego. And his whole goal in life is to support all of Krishna's pastimes. In fact, all of the spiritual world is maintained by Baladev. All of the paraphernalia of Krishna, all of the land and the houses and everything that you see there, it's all Chintamani, but that's all a manifestation of Lord Baladev, who's there to serve Krishna. And he's the very first expansion of Krishna. So his mind and his whole intent is service to Krishna. And so this is the another key to success in life, is the service attitude. Following in the footsteps of Lord Balaram and developing a service attitude. In the series of Gayatri mantras that one receives in our line, the first mantra is the Brahma Gayatri mantra, the second one is the Guru Pranam mantra, and the third is a Guru Gayatri. And it's a meditation on Guru, that the Guru is inspiring me to take to devotional service. I'm remembering the inspiration of the Guru to move ahead. And this inspiration is the inspiration of service. And this comes from Lord Baladev, who sets the mood and opens the way for Krishna to appear within the womb of Devaki. So Lord Sankarshan Baladev appeared in that womb, and then he was transferred to the womb of Rohini. And now everyone thought that there was a miscarriage from Devaki. And Baladev actually appeared in the womb of Rohini. And one of the reasons that he's called Sankarshan is because he brings the devotees together. He brings the two families together, Devaki and Vasudev and Yashoda and Nanda, and unites them. That's the reason he's called Sankarshana. And this is another point that comes out in the Srimad Bhagavatam about Sankarshana. And that is that it's very important for the devotees to live harmoniously. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said, one of the statements that he made was that you'll show your love for me by how much you cooperate. So operate means that you're doing something, and co means that you do it together. And that ain't easy. It's one of the hardest things. I've observed, especially in Kali Yuga, I've noticed that it's become more pronounced, but especially in this day and age, everywhere I go, everywhere I look, there's a polarization, and it's really hard for people around the world to cooperate together. And then I notice it amongst devotees. It becomes difficult for devotees to cooperate together. There's always a polarity that it's like this. No, it's like this. And very difficult to come together and actually cooperate. So we need mercy to do that, actually. It's a superhuman thing, a superhuman feat to cooperate with others. And it requires a purity of heart. And it requires this steadiness of mind to be able to cooperate with others. When Prahlad Maharaj was teaching his classmates, he told them, there's no enemy in this world except for the uncontrolled mind and senses. Everyone's thinking, he's my friend, he's my enemy, Prahlad said. And this is the cause of materialistic life. We're competing against this person and envious of another person. But actually he said, there is no enemy in this world except your own uncontrolled mind and senses. So Srila Prabhupada said, cooperate, and this shows your love for me. Vatsala, who's a godbrother of mine, of ours, and who's now is the temple president in Hawaii. He's a very steady type devotee. He's been married, I think, for 34 years or something, and he and his wife have been in devotional service. He has children that are now engaged full-time in devotional service also. And recently, I wasn't there, but someone told me about a conversation he was having with another devotee. It was a very young devotee who was saying that, I was married 2 years ago, but then, you know, we fell out of love and we split up and, you know, now I'm doing something else. And Vatsala, very, you know, in his very kind of steady way, said to him, don't even use the word love until you've been married for 15 years. And I was talking to Radhanath Maharaj about that one day, and I mentioned that story, and he was saying, he started expounding on it, and he was saying, yeah, this is true for any kind of activity that we do. Before you start talking about love or, you know, love of Godhead and things, be steady. You know, stick in there and do your service. Matra sparshas dukonteya shitoshna sukatukada agama paino nityas tamstatikshashvabharata. This is the basis of what Krishna says is fundamentals of devotional service, that tolerate the ups and the downs and the heat and cold and show up for your service. And steadily, over time, when I do that, then Krishna starts to give some mercy. Otherwise, it's not a cheap thing. It's not attained very simply or easily. It's obtained by someone who is determined. So, the seventh pregnancy of Devaki signifies the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After the six sons of Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya are killed, the Shesha incarnation creates a suitable situation for the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, when one awakens his natural Krishna consciousness, Lord Krishna appears. This is the explanation given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So, Krishna is extremely kind and merciful. He's within the heart of everyone. And those who are sincere about devotional service, for those who are sincere, he says, Tesham ivanukam partam aham agyana jamtamaha nashem yatma bhavasto gyana dipena bhashvata, that I give the knowledge from within the heart like a lamp. I light up your way from within your heart how to navigate through this dangerous material world. So, especially on the appearance days of the Supreme Lord and his devotees, which are opportunities to renew our vow in devotional service, to renew our determination. And the question is, if not now, when? Because human life is very short. We have an opportunity to come to the perfection of life through devotional service. And this comes through the special mercy of Lord Balaram. Srila Baladev ki jai. Gopremanande haribo. A couple of reflections or questions. Jagarini. Microphone. Still none of them.
I remember years ago Srila Prabhupada commenting that his disciples were not enough afraid of Maya, but I don't remember the context. Do you remember that?
No, but there could have been a lot of opportunities. I remember Shruti Kirti recently talking in a memory about how he used to hear Prabhupada all the time talking about the perils of the material world, and he said it was very hard to assimilate that when one was in one's 20s. We'd hear about it and think like, yeah, right, sure. But the actual fear of material existence was hard to come by. Yes, Kishore.
In the passage that you told about the sin of the sons of Hiranyakashipu, he curses them that they'll be killed by him in the next life because of that, because of taking benediction from Brahma. So does it mean that he became Kamsa? Or?
Yeah. He comes back as Kamsa to mete out that punishment.
Because I thought Jaya Vijaya takes three incarnations. One is that of...
Let me revisit that. He's a relative. They're relatives of in the pastime of Hiranyakashipu, they're relatives of Hiranyakashipu. And he says that when they come back as Kamsa, I'll have to recheck that.
Okay, permission.
Actually, it's here. But I'll revisit it. What is it? Right.
Shishupala and Dantavakra. Shishupala and Dantavakra. Thank you.
Rakshit and then Bhumi.
Why is Baladev considered to be the original spiritual master? Is that because he's the first expansion of Krishna? That's a guess I have. And the second thing is that he has been associated also with having a lot of strength. In the scriptures it is said that Balaram is especially strong. And I was wondering where the reference to the strength come from.
Once Prabhupada said that the duty of this spiritual master is to serve Krishna, and the duty of the disciple is to assist the spiritual master in serving Krishna. So Balaram is the servant of Krishna. So the spiritual master means a servant. That's what a spiritual master is. A spiritual master is someone who's fully engaged in serving Krishna. And so Balaram's main business, as I said, is to serve Krishna. He is he manifests himself as the bed of Krishna, for instance. And when you see Mahavishnu, you see Anantashesha, he's lying on Anantashesha. He's the Brahman's thread of Krishna. He manifests himself as the Brahman's thread. All the paraphernalia that Krishna uses is a manifestation of Balaram in service. He has the serving ego. So that's the ego of the spiritual master as a servant. So he's the original, first expansion. And Bala means strength. It means really spiritual strength. Mahatmanastu mam parta daivim prakritim ashrita. Bhajantyananya manaso gyatva bhutinam avyayam. It's the strength of the spiritual nature, the internal potency. And without that, we cannot become detached from the material world. But with Balaram's, the strength of Balaram, Ramante yoga noyanante satyananda chiratmani iti rama padenasu param brahma batiyate. The Shastra says that because of Rama, Rama actually means the highest pleasure. The highest pleasure is derived from Rama, from Balaram. And because of his influence, great yogis and sages become detached, or anybody, by the mercy of Balaram, become detached from the material world. That's the greatest strength. In fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada mentions that there's two kinds of heroes in this world. One hero is the hero who's very expert at enjoying material nature. And someone has expensive car and a nice house and a beautiful family, and everyone looks and says, oh, you know, what a hero. But that hero is very soon vanquished. The other kind of hero is the person who is able to control the senses. And that's the strength that comes from Balaram. Bala means spiritual strength. Bhumi?
Hare Krishna. I may have just missed something, so I'm sorry if I'm making you repeat. But the six asuras that took birth in birth from the womb of Devaki and were killed by Kamsa, were they specific demons? And what happened to them after they were they liberated, or what was the circumstance?
They were liberated because ultimately, in the later on in the pastimes of as things continued, Devaki actually wanted her sons back, and she had heard that Krishna, as charity for his spiritual master, giving dakshin, he had rescued his spiritual master's son and brought him back from the abode of Yamaraj. So she asked Krishna for charity, that my sons, I lost all my sons to Kamsa, and I would like to see them again. You know, I never got a chance to hold them or anything. So Krishna brings those sons back to Devaki. And when she does, they come and she nurses them. And they, because Krishna had nursed from then they also became purified, and they became liberated because of that. And it's mentioned, there's a section here in the last part of the first chapter, which is very short. And it mentions about the Shadgarbhas that formerly an asura named Kalanemi had six sons named Hansa, Suvikarma, Krata, Damana, Ripurmardana, and Krodahanta. They were known as the Shadgarbhas or six Garbhas, and they were all equally powerful and expert in military affairs. These six Garbhas gave up the association of Hiranyakashipu, their grandfather, and underwent great austerities to satisfy Lord Brahma, who, upon being satisfied, agreed to give them whatever benediction they might desire. When asked by Lord Brahma to state what they wanted, the Shadgarbhas replied, "Dear Lord Brahma, if you want to give us a benediction, give us the blessing that we will not be killed by any demigod, Maharoga, Yaksha, Gandharvapati, Siddha, Charna, or human being, but by great sages who are perfect in their penances and austerities." Brahma understood their purposes and fulfilled their desire. But when Hiranyakashipu came to know of these events, he was very angry at his grandsons. "You have given up my association and have gone to worship Lord Brahma," he said, "and therefore I no longer have any affection for you. You have tried to save yourselves from the hands of the demigods, but I curse you in this way. Your father will take birth as Kamsa and kill all of you because you will take birth as sons of Devaki." Because of this curse, the grandsons of Hiranyakashipu had to take birth from the womb of Devaki and be killed by Kamsa, although he was previously their father. This description is mentioned in the Harivamsa, Vishnu Parva, second chapter. According to the comments of the Vaishnava Toshini, the sons of Devaki, known as Kirtiman, was the third incarnation. In his first incarnation, he was known as Smara and was a son of Marichi. And later, he became the son of Kalanemi. This is mentioned in the histories. Yes.
Just trying to relate, actually. You started your class by speaking on the Bhishma Dev, that you could relate to how Prabhupada was speaking this Srimad Bhagavatam on his day, on, during his last days, and in the same way Bhishma Dev was also speaking, you know, the dharma, the science of dharma to Yudhishthira on his deathbed. So I was just trying to relate, actually, that even Bhishma, he knew that Arjuna was going to kill him, you know, but he was so much loving and affectionate towards Arjuna. And also we know that Dronacharya, he knew that Drishtadyumna will be going to kill him, and his purpose of birth of Drishtadyumna is that he was born for killing Dronacharya. But he, even though although he knew, he still taught him the science of warfare. But when we know about Kamsa, that he knew Kamsa, that the person who is going to born of the Devaki will be his death, and he'll also be supreme personality of Godhead. But although he knew it, he still tried to kill him. But when you look at Bhishma Dev, or when you look at Dronacharya, they also knew that, you know, these are the people who will be killing me, you know, these children. But they still were so loving and affectionate, and they were impartial. So just,
yeah, the contrast, you mean?
Yeah, the contrast.
And also, Narada Muni came to Kamsa, and he told him what was going on, because Kamsa was... he could have been actually pacified, but when Narada came, he told him that actually the son is already somewhere alive and he's going to kill you, and he stirred him up. And when the demigods spoke to Kamsa on the chariot when he was bringing Devaki, their intention was to speed up the pastimes. So oftentimes the devotees, they want to see that these things happen quickly because they want Krishna to come. And this is typical of devotees who are very advanced. Even Queen Kunti was praying for catastrophes to come, because that means Krishna will be there to save them. And when Krishna was leaving, because there was, the war was over, everything was okay. I wanted to go back to what you said, Bhumi, about if you're in an assembly where somebody's reckless about devotees and Vaishnava Aparad. And it's just, I'll just make a quick mention that the Shastra says, Ishvare taradineshu balisheshu dvisatsucha prema maitri kripo peksha yakaroti samadhyamaha, that we must distinguish, there are different kinds of entities in the world. And a person who's in the middle platform means a preacher, somebody who's moving around the world with the intention of spreading Krishna consciousness, should be very discriminating, and that one kind of person is the devotee, and another kind of person is the innocent, and another kind of person is the envious. And then there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And towards all four of these different entities, the devotee is supposed to act correctly. Towards Krishna, developing love and service. Towards the devotee's friendship. Towards the innocent, it's meant to pour out as much mercy as possible, as much as they can take. And for those who are envious, we're supposed to be upeksha, or we're supposed to be avoid them. In other words, don't stir them up, because it makes it worse. Almost. Somebody help her? Tech department?
Okay. When we see the innocent getting bombarded by the envious, and sometimes the envious is all they're in Vaishnav garb. They have Vaishnav names, they have Vaishnav history. They have Vaishnav whatever, but they're not really behaving like a Vaishnava because they have a cutoff point, like for some, a feeling of entitlement that it's okay if I'm doing this because I'm doing it out of love for Prabhupada's, you know, some excuse that, you know, really isn't very bona fide. But there are innocent people in the assembly. There's new devotees, innocent devotees, and you said, you know, we shouldn't be we shouldn't stay in the place where these people associate, and even though we don't like their association and we'd rather not be there, we want to go there because we want to be able to give mercy to the innocent. But there are a lot of barriers to that in the form of people who like to criticize and are very careless and reckless, and they're in the garb of a devotee. Then what? And also sometimes coming to the defense of a devotee will bring their wrath on you.
Well, one thing is that is to always keep in mind that devotional service can't be checked. For someone who's sincere, very sincere, although they may be in a tender stage and it can be affected, but we've seen many times how there are people who are sincere of heart, and they go through all kinds of adverse situations and come out okay. Good to keep that as in mind. Secondly, for those who you have influence over, I mean, we all have a circle of influence, and you can do as much as you can within that circle of influence. And that is, if you have dependents, then you should do the best you can to fortify them against the world. Just like parents, when they have children, they know they're going to go out in the world. They do everything they can while they're growing up to give them strength, to fortify them in all different ways that they possibly can. And so you have to do the best you can with, you know, with the kind of enthusiasm and devotion that you have and clear thinking to help those that you can help. And depend on Krishna. Yes.
Last Balram Jayanti, I was meditating on this. During childhood pastimes of Lord Balram and Lord Sri Krishna, both have killed enormous numbers of demons, and there is no comparison on the strength. But when it comes to receiving parental love, Krishna gets the bulk. Like the whole, it may be just for the lack of my understanding of scriptures. I have only read about Krishna getting all the love from Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj. Being the elder brother to Krishna and being powerful, whether it's the Govardhan Leela, etc., where Krishna takes the stance of, no, father, we should not, offer all these things, but we should do What was the mode of or pastimes of Lord Balarama to meditate someone on his vatsalya, you know, to get some mellows about what he is getting from, you know, whether Rohini or Yashoda Mata or, you know, Nanda Maharaj?
Well, you can see when the later on, when the devotees all went to Kurukshetra, you'll find later in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the devotees all met at Kurukshetra, and there the mothers came from Rohini and Yashoda, all came from Vrindavan, from Gokula, to meet with Krishna. And there, they were so stunned in love for their sons that practically no one could even speak to them, because they were just in trance looking at their sons. And even Devaki, she was appreciating how much love Rohini and Yashoda had for Krishna and Balaram. She said, "I don't have this much love for Krishna and Balaram. And I'm their, you know, quote unquote, biological, I'm Krishna's biological mother." So in that pastime, you can see how they're shedding tears and the intensity of the motherly love that they have there. And that's also another very important point about the families, because although Yashoda was actually, well, considered from one point of view to be the foster mother of Krishna. Actually, Vishwanath Thakur, Varadhi Thakur explains differently, but Shankarshan brought all, brings them all together, and the love that they have amongst the families is very intense. And the very important point is that Devaki is not envious that Yashoda has more love for Krishna or Rohini has more love for Balaram. And this is one of the qualities of devotees, is that they appreciate the advancement of other devotees. A friend of mine named Vyasaki was giving his memories of Srila Prabhupada, and he was saying how they were all together doing the BBT library party, and they were in Singapore or some other foreign country when Prabhupada left the planet, and they didn't know it. So Vyasaki had been out talking to a professor about buying a full set of Prabhupada's books, and he was talking to the professor who somehow found out that Prabhupada had left the planet and said, "Did you know your spiritual master has left?" And being deeply affected, you know, he went back to the hotel where his partner that he was traveling with, Satyanarayan Prabhu, was staying. And he said he came into the apartment, and just as soon as he opened the door, he said, "Prabhupada has left the planet." And I think that Satyanarayan was brushing his teeth or shaving or something like that. But as soon as he told him, he said he went to pieces. He just immediately fell on the ground and started weeping uncontrollably. And I just remember how Vyasaki was saying in that memory of that instance that I wish I could have reacted like that, that I had as much of that reaction for Prabhupada's leaving that my godbrother Satyanarayan. And I was appreciating Vyasaki's appreciation of him, how much he was just saying, "Well, he's more advanced than me." And this is the case with the residents of Vrindavan, and when they all come together in their love for Rohini for Balaram and for Krishna as their parents, you can see that. And this is one of the hallmark points of a devotee, is that the devotee has appreciation for the advancement of other devotees. It's not envious of their advancement. So let's have Artik and Kirtan, and we'll remember Lord Balaram today, and pray to always be fearful of Maya, be afraid of making Vaishnava aparad. Remember in the pastime that Yoga Maya had to bring Krishna from the womb of Devaki, and it was a very difficult Balaram to the womb of Rohini from Devaki, and it was very difficult to do, but she prayed to Krishna for strength to do that. So whatever thing we have to do in devotional service, we should pray for the strength of Lord Balaram. And always appreciate devotees and whatever advancement they have. And this is the mood of pure devotional service. Lord Balaram Jayanti Ki. Jaya. All glories to the assembled devotees. God Premanande.